Welcome to CUCC Sermons for Everyone. No matter who you are or where you find yourself on life's journey, we're glad you've tuned in, and we hope you find meaning in this week's sermon. All right, here's a question to get us started this morning. How meaningful is communion to you? And obviously there's no right or wrong answer, but I encourage you to think about it all the same. In your life, on your spiritual journey, how meaningful, how sacred, how divine is communion? One thing I know for sure, there are likely as many different answers to that question as there are people in this room. We all have had different experiences at the communion table. Maybe for you it's a fairly neutral experience. It's something we do once a month. It's not a bad thing, but it's not something you find yourself thinking about, right, or getting excited about. Or maybe for you, communion carries some negative connotations. Maybe it feels overly religious or ritualistic, or maybe even worse, maybe you've attended churches in which you were told you were not the right type of person or the right type of Christian to receive communion. Still, for others of you, maybe the prayers and the bread and the cup is everything. All right, maybe for you, this is the place and the moment that you experience God the most, right? For some of you, communion is bust me out of the rehab facility important. And it's a gift to have all of that in a community. And I don't know where you all fit on that spectrum. I don't know what your experiences have been, but I do know that people of faith have found themselves gathering at tables, breaking bread, and remembering Jesus for thousands of years, and I know that many of them have come to know God better through it. Today we're going to read a really great story from the Gospel of Luke. It's often referred to as the Road to Emmaus. Like we said last week, there is like a 40-day window after Easter in which Jesus would occasionally appear to his disciples. There's not a ton of these stories written down, but a couple. And this one happens to be the most complete account of a post-Easter meetup between Jesus and his friends. And so the setting, it's still Easter. It's Easter Day. The women have just found the empty tomb, and these two lesser-known disciples are on the move. They're heading out of town. From Luke 24, starting in verse 13. Now on that same day, aka Easter, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in all of Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have taken place here in these days?" And Jesus asked them, "What things?" Right now, is it just me, or does it feel like Jesus is kind of setting them up there? Right, what things? It's one thing to go undercover, but then to pretend like he doesn't know what happened to himself Easter weekend, I find it funny. I'm glad some of you find it funny. It's like the original episode of Undercover Boss, right? It's still Easter. All of Jerusalem's in a buzz. Jesus' disciples are likely still in shock from the gruesome scenes of the weekend. They certainly don't know what to make of the empty tomb yet. And then Jesus himself puts these two disciples on the spot. What things? Right? Please explain this whole God, Jesus, death, but maybe still alive thing to me. How would you like it if Jesus put you on the spot like that? If you were forced to give an account for the buzz, the juice, the thing that makes Christianity all that it is. In fact, how would you answer that? You're on a road trip with a friend, or you're walking and talking with a neighbor, and out of nowhere they say, "Hey, I know you're a Christian, or a churchgoer, or a Jesus-following spiritual person. I've never quite gotten it. What's it all about? What's the God, Jesus, death, but maybe still alive thing all about?" How do you respond? What do you say? Is that the moment you pretend to get a text message from one of your kids who really needs you to come home right now? Do you pull a politician and give them a 20-minute non-answer, making them regret ever asking you the question? What do you say? I'm glad we're in a laughing mood, because I got jokes in this one. A while back, I was surfing the ever life-sucking feed of Facebook, and I think the metaverse has figured out what I do for a living, because despite never clicking or liking any of it, my feed often has a very churchy tone to it. So on this particular day, I came across a post where someone from what I could tell a sweet older lady genuinely asked if anyone could help her better understand the Easter story. It just didn't quite make sense to her. And I saw the post because a colleague of mine was one of hundreds of people who responded. I was intrigued to read her entire response, so I clicked see more. It's a pretty standard pastor move. Nothing flashy, right? Some stock lines, an invitation to further conversation. However, it didn't take long to realize that the comments were not only the genuine thoughts of well-meaning church folk, but also full of what I found to be hilarious, cynical trolls. A sweet lady asking for a little light to be shed on the Easter story was bombarded with some brilliant and yet slightly blasphemous responses. Would you like to hear some of my favorite comments? Okay, but I got to give you some advice first. Ready? It's okay to laugh. In fact, laughter is a troll's kryptonite. Simply refuse to get offended and laugh. It works every time. Plus, I happen to think these are hilarious. Ready? So, sweet Facebook lady says, can you help me better understand the Easter story? One user says, once upon a time, God set a bunch of rules that he'll kill you for not following. So he sent himself to earth as his own son so that humans could kill him, so that he would stop killing them. In the end, he decided to destroy the world one day anyways. Like I said, it's okay to laugh. Ready for another? Can you help me better understand the Easter story? Another user said, God loves you so much that you're dead to him if you break the rules. But also, he killed his only son for really no reason and sent him here to be a symbolic sacrifice for what you did. And if you don't accept that he's God's literal son, you'll burn in a lake of fire for eternity. But he loves you, really. Facebook. Okay, one more. This one's my favorite. Can you better help me understand the Easter story? This user said, God sent himself to sacrifice himself to himself to save us from what he'd do to us if he didn't sacrifice himself to himself. Also, give us your money. The point is, at least I think there is a point somewhere in here. The point is, the whole God, Jesus, dead but still alive thing isn't easy to wrap our minds around. It isn't easy to explain to anyone, let alone a stranger. Jerusalem's all in a buzz. Everyone's talking. Two disciples find themselves walking with an undercover Jesus, and they say, "Are you the only stranger that doesn't know the things that have been taking place?" And then Jesus says, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped he was the one to redeem Israel." Yes, and then besides all this, it's now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they didn't find his body there, they came back and they told us that they had indeed seen a vision of an angel who said he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see him." Friends, this isn't like a planned elevator speech. It's all fresh. They're processing it as it leaves their mouth. This has been the craziest weekend of their life. It keeps getting crazier, and they don't quite know what to make of it all. Right? They knew Jesus personally. They were close enough to the inner circle that they were there when Mary and the women came back from the tomb. They were the first to hear of the vision and the angels and the alive part. They're on the cutting edge of the very first sunrise service, and yet they still don't know what to make of it all. They don't know how to describe it. They don't quite know who Jesus is. Is Jesus dead or alive? Is he a prophet or divine? They're as confused as the rest of us. Then Jesus said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures." I encourage us not to get too caught up in Jesus calling them foolish, right? What I'll tell you is portraying the disciples as foolish, it's like a motif in the Gospel of Luke. It's one of Luke's things. In fact, throughout all the gospel accounts, the disciples are often portrayed as like ball-dropping, faithless students, right up until Pentecost at least. Then they all catch fire. But regardless, instead of imagining Jesus' words as like a demeaning attack, try to imagine it as a teacher bumping into students that he's been privately tutoring for years. It's more of a, "You still don't see it. You still haven't connected the dots." And then beginning with Moses and the prophets, Jesus gives them a master class in biblical interpretation. Right? Starting in the beginning of the beginning, he explained how he, Jesus, was part of a larger story of redemption that's playing out throughout the entire Bible. He fills in the gaps, tells them how it fits. It's a no-joke walk and talk. Jesus is preaching. Now I get that they weren't able to recognize Jesus, or as the passage said, their eyes were kept from recognizing him. But this time reading through it, I couldn't help but wonder, who did they think Jesus was? Who did they think was walking with them? Right, they're both in the inner circle, and then all of a sudden a stranger shows up who wasn't there when Jesus walked on water, wasn't there when he fed the 5,000. In fact, it's a stranger who they'd never seen at any of Jesus' teachings or miracles, and yet he shows up and seems to know everything about Jesus. All right, at what point do you get suspicious? At what point do you ask a follow-up question? Maybe they're a little more foolish than I gave them credit. If those jokers can make the team, maybe we've all got a chance. And we keep reading. Beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. Now, as they came near the village to which they were going, Jesus walked ahead as if he was going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it's almost evening and the day is now nearly over." So he went in and he stayed with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. And I wonder, does that language trigger anything in you? Does it bring you back to any memories, familiar experiences? When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. And then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. Yeah, the blessing, breaking, and sharing of bread seems to have triggered something in them too. In a way, they were transported to a previous experience, like their minds were opened up, their eyes opened, and all of a sudden it was clear it was Jesus. They had just spent all day walking and talking with Jesus. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. Their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and then he vanished from their sight. How unfair is that? They finally realized it was Jesus the whole time. Their eyes are finally open to this amazing reality, and they don't get to ask any follow-up questions. They don't get to give him a hug or a secret handshake. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And then he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking with us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour, they got up and returned back to Jerusalem, 7 miles. They got up and returned back to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 there, along with their companions. They were saying, "The Lord has risen, and he's appeared to Simon." Then the two told them what had happened on the road and how Jesus had been made known to them in the breaking of bread. I think it's a great closing line. They told them what had happened on the road and how Jesus had been made known to them in the breaking of bread. Friends, this is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. There's so much in this, right? In a way, we are all the disciples, each of us on our own journey. There are moments where we feel completely blind, almost as if something's blocking us from seeing things as they are. And then there are other moments of clarity, moments when it all makes sense. There are moments when we feel like we have all the answers, even though we don't, and other moments where we feel like we've got nothing to say or contribute, even though we do. There are moments when Jesus feels far away, like an abstract concept that's impossibly hard to wrap our minds around, and yet other moments, it feels like he's walking with us, talking with us along life's narrow way. It's quite the journey. I guess that's why it requires so much imagination and faith and surrender. What I see in this story is a Jesus who's back, different, like unrecognizably different, but back, and in a way, better than ever. I see a Jesus who takes the time to walk and talk with these disciples, right? He joins them on their journey. He could have easily revealed his identity, forced them to worship him, told them where to go or what to do with their lives, but instead, he joins them on their journey. I see a Jesus who isn't looking to cast the Old Testament or the Bible aside, but who, on Easter morning, found it worth his time to spend 7 miles walking, talking, and interpreting the Bible for them so that they might understand that this new thing is deeply rooted in this older thing. I see a Jesus who's hard to describe, hard to wrap our minds around, hard to explain to a stranger, and yet I see a Jesus who is made known in real, tangible, everyday sort of ways. Right? We see Jesus being made known in the breaking of bread. And so we regularly break bread together. We commission teams to help us break bread together. We teach our kids about breaking bread, and then we celebrate the first time they get to break bread. And we do all of this with the hopes that Jesus might be made known through the breaking of bread. We don't always get how it works or how God moves or even what Jesus looks like, but we keep doing it all the same. And so what is the whole God, Jesus, death, but still alive thing all about? What would you say? How would you answer that? Ego would entice us to do anything and everything to sound really smart. But from my experience, when talking about Jesus, when talking about spirit, when talking about the meaning and purpose of love and life, it's not about fancy words or ironclad arguments or citing the most prodigious Protestant reformers. It's about the heart. It's about your heart. It's about watching the world unfold. It's about experiencing God and then simply telling your story. These two disciples race back and find themselves in a room with the 11, all right, the most famous of all the disciples. And the two of them could have tried their hand at making some theological claim about the resurrected and glorified Lord. Or starting with Moses and moving on to the prophets, they could have tried to regurgitate Jesus' masterclass on biblical interpretation. But instead, they rush into the room. They stand face to face with Peter, James, and John, and they just tell their story. They tell them about the walk. They tell them about the talk. And they tell them how Jesus was made known to them in the breaking of bread. And so I don't know how you would go about explaining the whole God, Jesus, dead but still alive thing. I don't know how meaningful communion is to you or what role it has played in your spiritual journey. I don't know where we all are on that spectrum. I don't know what your experiences have been, but I do know that no matter who you are or where you find yourself on life's journey, you are welcome here. I know that next week, as we celebrate confirmation and communion, that each one of you is fully welcome to this table, just as you are. And who knows, maybe, just maybe, Jesus will be made known to us in the breaking of bread. Amen.